This episode of the Getting Better Now podcast is brought to you by Golf Genius Software. Less work, more fun, and more revenue.
You know, when you look at the future of work and what our role as leaders is to look at that, right? Is to say, where are we going to be in 10 years and what should we be putting in place to ensure that we have the best pool of PGA professionals committed to our brand and their work in 10 years' time? And what does that look like? How are people going to check in 10 years? Is it going to be with five professionals standing behind the counter or three professionals, whatever your facility may be? Is it going to be a different mode? How are we going to interact at facilities with our consumers and customers? And how does the PGA professional stand in that space? And what does that mean? And how does that evolve?
This is the Getting Better Now podcast, presented by the Golf Business Network, the show by golf professionals for golf professionals, profiling experts from inside and outside the golf industry to help you advance your career, make a lasting impact, and achieve your goals. Here's your host, PGA professional from St. David's Golf Club, Dean Kandel.
Welcome to episode 25 of the Getting Better Now podcast and part 2 of our conversation with the president of the PGA of America, Susie Whaley. In part 2, Susie discusses what's going to help attract young people to our business and the PGA's recruiting efforts, while addressing the need for managers today to evaluate the hours and days that they require from their staff during the season. She continues with a discussion about the changes to the PGA education system and whether being able to select a specific career track will funnel too many young professionals toward teaching and coaching and away from traditional roles. Susie finishes with what she hopes she, the board members, and the association can accomplish by the end of her presidency. This is another entertaining and insightful conversation with one of the most influential individuals in our game today. If you missed part one, go back and hear Susie talk about how she handles the challenges of managing all of her commitments on a daily basis and what methods she's used to stay organized while building an incredibly successful career. So here it is, part two of our conversation with Susie Whaley. I hope you enjoy it. I want to jump back to something you said about, say, your generation or previous generations of golf professionals kind of beating in this, hey, if you're not there, open to close, you're not doing your job. And, you know, I've worked in that environment before. I feel like I'm an age where I'm a bridge between that generation and say the millennial generation and now younger. So I kind of struggle with that line between, okay, this is a busy job during the season and we're going to be here a lot, but I also don't want to be that, you know, that slave driver saying that you need to be, you know, you need to be here open to close or else you're not doing your job just because I did it. That's the way it was for me, you know, when I was a young assistant. Where's right. That line, you think, these days?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult question because, you know, employee costs are higher than ever. And I think, you know, oftentimes we are in search of staff. And so It becomes really difficult to not schedule somebody for too many hours. Obviously, with wage and hour laws, you know, certainly everybody has to abide by those. But we all know that sometimes that gets stretched for those that are on salary. And you know, for us, at least, where I am and my husband's business, I can tell you that, like, for example, they've scheduled time now for their staff to practice during their work hours. And I think that's key for them to be outside talking to their customers, being on the range, being on the putting green, hearing kind of feedback or conversation of what's great about the club, what needs some work. And that's what we forget we have the opportunity to do when we get out into the field and out of our office, is you can actually make your facilities better doing that. But the fine line of this work hour, how long you have to be there to be considered excellent, is something that I think truly we need to reset. And for many that are young, when I speak to them that are new PGA professionals or even second career PGA professionals, that is the number one question that they ask me. They just weren't aware that their time wouldn't be their own. They were very aware that, you know, holidays obviously were going to work because we're in an outdoor environment in an industry where that's where people are going to have their expendable time, right? Where on a holiday, they don't have to work. They're going to be at our facilities. And I think that's something that everybody that becomes a golf professional needs to understand and just be good with, because that's not going away, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
But I think for your weekly day in, day out, I think it's a conversation that younger professionals aren't afraid to have anymore with their employers. Look, you know, I'm going to work this amount of time, and then I'm not going to work. I'm going to work 5 days a week, right? Not 7 days a week. And for employers, mm-hmm. that's really hard because of the improbability of having enough staff. But at the same time, it is the right thing to do. I think that people need to have time away. I think people, and that time away needs to be real time away, where they're not being emailed all day long about the member guest, where they're not being right. emailed all day long about something else, where you're not having to be on text, where you're actually with, whether it's your family or friends or you know, whatever you like to do in your spare time, you know, maybe it's another hobby that you're enjoying. You should be able to do that because you're going to come back fresher. And I realize this is a difficult culture to build based on those people my age and older who are like, you got to be kidding me. Like, where are you going? Like, why aren't you here right. practicing and getting ready for tomorrow's event? So I'm not here to say I have the solutions, but I think as role models for those of us that have been in the business a little longer, we need to take a second and think about what we're asking of those that are working for us. Think about their home environment. And think about how we can help them organize and prioritize their time. So in the days and hours that they are with us, that they're getting more productivity out of those hours, which would then allow us to say, oh, we're good, right? You're good. Have a great day off.
Yeah.
Instead, I think we all kind of do a gazillion different things. Not sure we complete everything that we've started in a way that perhaps the employer wanted. We know we can get to it when we get back. And that's what exudes great stress on those of us that have been in the business a long time, because most golf professionals, and I'm generalizing, are pretty well detailed and organized and want completion. And I think it's a two-way street. I think if younger professionals who are demanding a work balance that makes sense to them realize then that their output and their productivity needs to be higher in the days that they're there, then I think we can come to an agreement that, okay, this is working. And I think that's the way the older generation is going to get trained, that it's okay. But the younger generation has to be a part of it. They have to commit to more productivity in the hours they're there.
Yeah, and that's very well said. And I've had that conversation here. This season, we moved to a five-day work week here. You know, I'm fortunate. I have three assistants, a merchandiser, a teaching professional. So we're not a tiny staff. There are bigger staffs, but that was the conversation though that we had, that, hey, if we're going to go to this 5 day week, here are the expectations and things need to be done when you pack up and you leave and you're not going to be here on a Wednesday now or a Thursday instead of just that Monday when we're closed. And I think that works well. You're almost putting it on the staff to say, hey, it's up to you to keep up your end of the bargain. I'll keep scheduling you 5 days, but you have to do your part too.
Right.
And I think that does help, you know, people with that old school feel should help them say, okay, well, if they are getting everything done, why else would I, you know, drag them here when they're holding up their end? So I'd encourage anybody to try to do that.
I will say those of us and I'm throwing myself under the bus, those of us would be like, oh man, I get this much out of them now in 5 days. Just think what I could get out of them in seven, right? So right. I'm not sure all right. of us will like be able to swallow it right away and say, oh, now everything is good. But, you know,
I get
think,
it.
Yeah, it's hard.
Tough.
It, It is. It's really difficult, but I think we have to come to a meeting of the minds and realize, and also realize the challenges that everyone in your workplace faces on their time, and mm-hmm. and to be equitable in that challenge, right? Just because somebody's single, for example, doesn't mean they don't deserve yeah. the same amount of time away as somebody who has children, right? And I mm-hmm. and I think we tend to, and again, a generalization, but we tend to think, oh, well, they don't have anything to do. We'll keep them here, right? right. And that's just yeah. completely unfair. And that person becomes resentful of
it
that.
It could drive them out of the business.
And it could drive them out of the business, but also drive them into a, you know, your culture isn't going to be as strong as it could be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So kind of bridging this into careers, I mean, I think for me, I went to this 5-day work week, and one of the benefits of it is I'm hoping that when I have positions open that I'm going to attract more people to apply, and that's going to be a positive. So I think that having that conversation, as you said, about the culture of making it a friendlier workplace and trying to make it more attractive working during the season versus what it used to be. What else can we do to get more young people excited about being in the golf business? Because that was one of the questions that I fielded on our section Facebook group for you, that people are saying, how are we going to attract people in this business? I can't find anybody. The ironic thing is the assistants say, I can't find a good job, but then the head pros say, I can't find any good assistants. So
yeah. So I think this is twofold, and we've been addressing this for about 18 months now in leadership, because we know that that's out there. There's two mm-hmm. sides of it. As an economics major, demand right now is extremely high and supply is low, and that usually raises compensation. So mm-hmm. in that sense, a little bit of good news, right? Because yeah. certainly our compensation needs to increase. On the other side of the coin, we are in a shortage of golf professionals in many demographics across the country. It's not everywhere, but certain parts of the country are really struggling filling positions. So we've mm-hmm. started a recruiting plan. We've never recruited at the PGA of America previously that I'm aware of. And so 18 months ago, our leadership and board set the vision in our business planning to begin recruitment. And so what we're doing is we have a couple staff members hired that are going out to the Division 1, 2, 3 NAIA and community college level and club golf level through our Next Gen relationship and partnership, where mm-hmm. we're actually recruiting what our business entails. And what I mean by that is, as an example, many of the young women that I hear from or have an opportunity to talk to who are thinking about coming into the golf business think that their options are coaching or merchandising, teaching or merchandising,
right.
and aren't aware that they could be in communications and they could work in a section office in accounting. They could work for the Golf Channel. They could work for, you know, PXG. They could work for, I mean, there's just multiple, as you know, and those listening know, many more opportunities outside of necessarily a standalone golf operation that they mm-hmm. could be involved in. But they also could be an owner, a general manager, a director of golf, a head golf professional, not just a director of instruction. So that's been really clear over the course of the 18 months that has truly been a wall of one of the many reasons why young women aren't coming into our business is because if they're not interested, which I love coaching, I think mm-hmm. it's my passion. I love to do it. But not every female feels the same way I do. But they thought those were their avenues. So that's getting dispelled, which we're excited about, and we're seeing some traction there. We've also approved at the board level passing of your PAT with collegiate events that meet our standard for a PAT. So 2 days, obviously. And we've had close to 167 apply now for submit their PAT scores that have been approved. And at our PGA Works Championship, formerly our PGA Minority Championship, we had 111 pass that day alone their PAT. Now, that doesn't mean that all of them will come into the golf business, but right. their PAT has been counted for the golf business. And then what we do with those, so the 167 and then those 111, we immediately attach a career consultant to those that have applied. And our career consultants then outreach to these young men and women to showcase the jobs that we have as opportunities, and then also the journey that you can go on within your career. So many members may or may not have seen our PGA Journeys campaign, which started about a year ago, where we are highlighting the actual journeys of PGA professionals, male and female, in varying different roles within the golf industry on our PSAs. And that's incredibly important to us because we all know coming out of college and so many having college debt, when you look at our salaries, that's a deterrent for sure.
Sure.
When you're looking at, you know, a $60,000 debt and you're looking at the salary for this position, which you know you'll love, you're going to be in the business and sport that you love, you want to be a part of it, but that's a hard decision to make when you're trying to pay off your bills. So we're trying to showcase that first level, yes, we understand, but let's showcase where you can go in the golf industry and where you can elevate to and how long that may take you to do it so that you can make a real conscious choice to stay in the business that you love and be a part of it. So those two things we're working extremely hard on. We're also working really hard on making sure that we're outreaching to veterans and to military. Second careers is an opportunity we've found very, very strong and popular for us. We're going through our PGA Hope programming. Some of those now are in our PGA program, which is incredibly exciting that they started in PGA Hope learning the game and now want to be in our industry. So we're striving to ensure, even with our PGM universities, that we have a whole recruiting plan. We've set up platforms for each of those universities to recruit with video backup as well as material backup that we haven't had in the past that will then outreach to sections because we want to start at junior league. We want those playing in PGA Junior League to know that this is an opportunity for them and could be a career for them. We're an $84 billion industry. And many families and parents don't know that. They don't look at what their professional or their PGA professional is doing for their family in that kind of a vision. It's more of, oh, this is what you do, and this is the option for my child. When in fact, yes, that child may love that. And I mean, that was me, right? My PGA professional was my mentor and my inspiration. But you know, some children may not want to be that route, but parents are only seeing that as one thing we do versus the enormity of the industry and how their child can be a part of that as a PGA professional. So we're working really hard. It's not going to happen overnight, but we're excited about this and we're committed to it.
I hope that you're enjoying this interview. Let's take a minute to hear from our sponsor, Golf Genius. It's time to say goodbye to three-ring binders in your golf shop. Golf Genius Software's new product called Golf Shop helps golf professionals save time, eliminate paperwork, and deliver exceptional service to their club members. Golf Shop streamlines special orders, tracks demo clubs, and automates member communication. It's also designed to end the long-standing reliance on three-ring binders, notepads, spreadsheets, and other older and less efficient methods of managing Golf Shop workflow. Simon J. Buckle, he's the PGA head professional at Brook Hollow Golf Club, commented that Golf Genius Golf Shop has streamlined the way we handle special orders. All the order details are in one place and are quickly accessible. We can stay one step ahead of any issues automatically, keeping members informed about the progress of their order and deliver excellent service to our membership. As somebody who's been using this product as well, I agree with that 100%. And GBN members receive special pricing through 2019 on Golf Genius Golf Shop. To learn more about Golf Genius Golf Shop, go to golfgenius.com. Now back to our interview. Was there any conversation through the changes to the education program to become a PGA member that this may further dilute the pool of assistants if we're essentially, as I understand it, allowing people to select that track, that be very specific now, right? Between golf operations, teaching, coaching, executive management, I guess it's called. So if I have that right.
Yeah, you do. That was really good.
Right. So, I've been doing a little research, but I'll tell you personally, my first thoughts when I heard about this change was that I think this is going to push a lot of young professionals towards teaching and coaching, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I think that could be a more they may see that as a more, as a better path, or the one where you can be a top 100 teacher, end up, you know, coaching on the PGA Tour. And so I'm going to do that and further dilute that pool of qualified assistants. So did, was that part of the conversation at all?
Oh, absolutely. And so we have the coaching, teaching, golf operations, executive management, as you said. And, you know, when you look at the future of work and what are our role as leaders is to look at that, right? Is to say, where are we going to be in 10 years and what should we be putting in place to ensure that we have the best pool of PGA professionals committed to our brand and their work in 10 years time? And what does that look like? How are people going to check in 10 years? Is it going to be with five professionals standing behind the counter or three professionals, whatever your facility may be? Is it going to be a different mode? How are we going to interact at facilities with our consumers and customers? And how does the PGA professional stand in that space? And what does that mean? And how does that evolve? And so we had multiple conversations about, okay, so right now compensation is higher if you start first as a coach and a teacher, and that's going to be attractive to a lot of young professionals. And we know that. But when you look at history in our business and you look at most people's careers, I'll take mine for an example. So I started out as a player. I got into the business, became an LPGA TNCP member first, and then became a PGA professional in 2001. I was a teacher when I first began and a coach, and then went into becoming an HP, right? Which was nothing that I ever imagined I would do, take, or want to do. Learned so much from that. I became a broadcaster after that for ESPN while I was still coaching and teaching. Moved on from there. So, I mean, my career had zero straight line trajectory, right? My career was literally all over the place. And I believe that that happens to many professionals, because I think you'll even see right now, you know, our numbers are highest in coaching and teaching and executive management right now. But what you're seeing as we progress, so if you take a five-year trend or timeline, which we won't have had that 5 years for a couple more years on this new learning track. But if you look at the five-year trend, many who thought they were going to love standing on a lesson tee, you know, 8 hours a day, are saying, well, wait a second, you know, got to be honest, while I do love to teach, I'd love to do more than just teach. And then they're morphing kind of back into golf operations and teaching. We have some that go into golf operations that say, gosh, you know, I love this side of the business, but I miss teaching a little bit. And that's amazing, because then they can go teach a little bit. And like where I work at Mirasol, we have an instruction team, but everybody in the golf shop also teaches. And I love that. And so there's a mix that I think is really making our facilities stronger. And then you have, because everybody understands each other's roles a little better. And then the executive management track, obviously, for those that, you know, are interested in leadership and running the facility and F&B and how that all connects, that those are typically your higher priced salaries as well. But I do believe that once somebody, and we do talk about this in the education program, if you're versed in coaching and teaching, if you're versed in golf operations, you are going to be a better executive manager, because your ability to connect with those that are trying to build a culture at your facility is stronger. And I find that when executive managers, and that's why we're working so hard on building confidence amongst our PGA professionals, that you can be that if you want to be that. And I state that in that way because it's important. Not everybody wants to be the general manager. But if you want to be the executive manager, you can own that space, because golf is what's driving the business of that facility. And I find that some of the executive managers, with not trying to disrespect anybody, who have never been a part of golf, I think it's a difficult connection. And while it can be learned, I think for a PG professional to hold that seat and be able to connect with an associate, connect with the head golf professional, director of golf, understand what the director of instruction is trying to build or their teaching staff is trying to build. That is, to me, but I'm biased, obviously, as a PGA professional, but that to me is the perfect scenario for a culture that's incredible. And then if you can have the superintendent be a PGA professional, well, then we've just hit a home run. But you know, I think sometimes some of our professionals don't think they have the skills to be the executive manager when that's just not the case. I mean, you can learn those skills. You can find the support to learn those skills. You know, we have tons of networking opportunities for you to learn those skills if you choose to, you know, but mm-hmm. I think that to answer your question, yes. Do I see more people migrating into one path? I do, but my gut is many of them will migrate back out.
Yeah. And that's kind of, as I've, you know, walked it forward and thought about it, you know, I would have imagined that occurring, because anybody that has stood on a lesson T 8, 9, 10 hours a day understands that it's hard, you know, and that, yes, you might make more money early on, but again, you're earning every single one of those dollars, right? You're not punching the clock, or you're not making a salary. So you're out there for every one of those dollars, and it is hard. So hopefully we do continue to see that. And it is good for these young assistants to dabble and get experience in different areas of the industry so they can commit and know where they, you know, put a plan together and build their career. I certainly agree with that. So hopefully we continue to see that kind of spread out through all the different career tracks. So I want to get you out of here soon. I know we've been on for a while and I appreciate your time, but I just want to give you the opportunity with this last question to just tell us what success would mean at the end of your presidency at the PGA of America. What do you want to be able to say when you walk out the door at the end of your term that you've accomplished?
Yeah, you know, I get asked that so often, and I hope this doesn't come across as cliche, but you know, it can't be about me, right? We have mm-hmm. so many things in the works that started before me that may complete during my term, but were put in place 6 years ago or 8 years ago mm-hmm. to kind of gain traction. And then there's things that we're putting in place today that we may not see results for in 5 or 6 years, that board and that officer corps, it comes across maybe like they've done that. So I think to say, you know, what have I done is a really sure. hard thing to answer, because I've been in the room since 2010, excluding 2014, when I was off the board and then was running for office. And I've just seen so many things come across our desk where we're striving to ensure that our members' lives are better. And that's mm-hmm. that's a challenge every time that happens, because we are so diverse. People confuse dimensions of diversity, in my opinion. While we may look very similar, meaning that we have a lot of white males in our organization, our dimensions of diversity are enormous. We're from different backgrounds, different cultures. We're from different parts of the country. You know, we have different jobs. So while we're working hard on inclusion and making sure we don't all look the same, to make everybody, make everyone's lives happier, 29,000 of them, is hard, because you're going to help some and oftentimes others aren't going to reap the benefit of that. So what I hope to accomplish is that we remember that it's all about the game. The game is what has us all here. And so if we can make the game a little stronger, a little better, and a little more inclusive, then we've done our job. If we can make our members feel like the benefits they're receiving from being a PGA professional, whether it's an employment or education, whether it's a deferred savings plan, which we're working on incredibly hard to get passed and through, which would be a pension plan for our members, it is not completed, but it's something that we're committed to trying to get completed. We've never been successful, but it's on our radar. Where we offer mm-hmm. Resources and tools through PGA.coach for those that are involved in the coaching space, and those that have facilities that have programming, to where we're giving you opportunities to from our app that allows you to have practice plans pre-built, that saves you a little time, that helps you outreach to your consumers and to your customers to have the best experience possible for as long as possible, and that your association is helping you do that. Back of the house, where you're not spending time behind your computer having to do that. Those are the things we're committed to as a board, that our championships continue to remain incredibly strong so that we have the resources to be able to provide sections and members resources. And so, you know, it's a huge job, a challenging job, but one that every board member in that room is committed to every day. You know, there isn't a day that goes by that we don't think of any partnership, championship, or program that we try to accomplish. If it's not helping the member in some way, it doesn't go through the filter. We shouldn't be spending mm-hmm. our time on it. And that's been a wonderful cultural shift for us to really let everybody know that is our goal and that is our objective. Our objective is also to get more people playing golf, obviously, but sure. Our PGA professionals are the ones that do that.
And I think that's really good to hear and to see some actual, you know, tangible things that you all are working on to try to make it better for our membership. Because I think that's right or wrong. That's always been the knock that people have. You know, the PGA should do more for me as the PGA professional. You hear that all the time. But it's happening. So I just want to thank you not only for your time today, but thank you for being such an incredible representative of us as the PGA professionals and as our president. I think you're doing a phenomenal job. We're seeing you all over the place and really been an awesome face of our association. And I know you'll continue to do that for us every day that you're there. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it so much. And I appreciate everything all your listeners are doing for the game and for us at the PGA of America, because I wear the badge proudly. I know all of you do too. And keep up the great work.
All right. Well, thank you, Susie. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
This was the Getting Better Now podcast, presented by the Golf Business Network. Head over to iTunes to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And be sure to rate and review while you're there. For more information, go to golfbusinessnetwork.com.